listening to Truth to You with Jono. Joining me in the studio is Hani. Say g'day.
Hello.
Hello and g'day. Wherever you may be around the world, it is good to have your company. It is time for Culture Pearls with a cultured Karaite. G'day, Deborah.
G'day. Howdy, y'all. How are y'all doing?
Doing very well. Mm-hmm. Wonderful to have you back on the program. What are we talking about today?
Oh, I've got so much to talk about. But first of all, I have a report from a gentleman in Mississippi that I sent kefir grains to. And he's been keeping in touch with me. And I wanted to know, you know, the progress of he and his wife, some healing that they needed and things like that. Mm-hmm. This gentleman, oh, good day, John. His name is John Yochanan.
Hi, John.
In Mississippi.
Yeah.
He has kept in touch with me. And this gentleman has single-handedly given out kefir grains now, at this point, to his entire congregation. And various other people that are connected to the congregation. So everybody in the congregation is making kefir, and they're making it, I think most of them are making it from the raw goat milk that one of the members has. She has not only great goats, and she's got this wonderful goat milk, but she makes goat milk soap and some other very interesting products. And she has a website called Gan Eden Soaps, G-A-N, E-D-A-N, soaps, mm-hmm. and wonderful stuff, amazing stuff. And she doesn't use any lard in her soap making. She's actually been on some forums and things, you know, arguing with people because they don't list sometimes all of the things in the natural soaps. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people use lard. And she said, I know a lot of people that don't want to use lard in their
yes.
soaps. And so she does not. And anyway, she has all these goats, and so everybody's getting this wonderful raw goat milk, and everybody's making kefir, and they're eating good whole vegetables. And he called me the other day to tell me that now, you know, the whole congregation is drinking kefir and doing good things, and give me the report of what's happening to those people.
Wow,
that's wonderful.
They're losing weight. They're losing acid reflux. They're losing stomach issues. They're losing rheumatoid arthritis problems.
Ooh.
They're getting better. One lady had a skin rash for several years. It's now gone. It is completely gone. And these folks are just really getting themselves in really good shape.
That's great.
Isn't that amazing?
What a wonderful story. So he asked that you send some kefir grains to him. He has increased his kefir grains and has been handing them out throughout his congregation. The congregation have been combining it with one of the members' goat's milk, and they've all been taking it and they've been experiencing the health benefits. And isn't that wonderful to have a whole group of people that are doing it together and sharing stories and seeing the benefits all together? That's a wonderful thing. Thank you, John, for doing that.
Yeah, praise Jehovah for that. That's great.
Ooh. That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's wonderful. So, and bringing up the point of raw goat milk, I know that that's what y'all do. Y'all have goats and have the wonderful, you know, raw goat milk. And I think you're actually even able to get raw cow milk.
We've been able to get it directly from the dairy. Do you want to?
Oh, well, I mean, yes, I'm still using the goat's milk, and actually personally prefer the goat milk kefir. but I've got two jars going now. I've got some grains in the raw cow's milk, and I've got some grains in the raw goat's milk, and they are different. They do. I mean, the cow's milk is creamier, and like you said, Dev, the little grains just all float to the top and sit in the cream and go, yay!
If I was a grain, I would float to the top and sit in the cream too.
That's me. Yep.
But
I love that cream.
Yeah. So I mean, it's not a vast difference, but it is. It is a. It is. Look, and we are loving our kefir at the moment. It's just, and also the weather is just perfect for it for us at the moment. It's so thick and creamy and, it's just when it's making.
Whatever the combination of weather and climate and humidity or whatever it is, lately, just recently, Kani made some goat's milk cheese, right? Cream cheese.
The kefir cream cheese.
The best you've ever made. Oh, it was just nice. And it was great because we had visitors.
We had visitors.
And g'day to Mark and
Izumi
from Japan, she is. And Mark, and they actually live here in Australia, but they've just been over to Israel, and they've been over to North Carolina, and they visited Keith there. And
well, they met Nehemiah.
They met
Nehemiah
and Yoel. And anyway, so they dropped in here. And it was great to be able to go, hey, have some of this. This is the best she's ever made. But Dev, she's also just made a cheese from cow's milk, right?
Yes, I did. But I didn't it's not actually kefir cheese. But I'm experimenting with I'm making a batch of kefir cream cheese with the cow's milk right now. And when we finish this interview, I'll go and see how it's going. but I did actually make just a standard soft cheese, and I pasteurized the raw cow's milk, and it was so good. It's so good.
It's awesome. And so she gave me a slice of it, and I thought, man, this is infinitely better than any cheese that we've bought from the store. I mean, any regular cheese from the store. And I said, look, if we're getting this really good deal on raw cow's milk, we have to be making our own cheese because I will very happily have this.
So it seems that I'm adding cheesemaker to my repertoire.
Cheesemaker.
Oh,
yep.
That's awesome. I just bought a book to make artisan cheeses at home.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to get in it. Now, did you just say, I might not have understood, did you say you pasteurized some of it?
Yes. I actually did with this, with the cow's milk, the raw cow's milk. It's so simple. Anyone can do it. Honestly, it's just so simple. It's basically just boiling them, not even boiling it, just heating it until it's almost boiling. There is an actual...
To the point of simmering.
It's almost boiling. Almost, there is actually a degree that it's supposed to be at. I think it's 185. But
you don't pasteurize all your milk.
No, that's just for the cheese.
Because that's a step, I think, in the cheese making. I don't know that much about it now, you know, just yet. But I think that's a step in some of the cheese making.
I think you basically have to do it because once it's at that heat, and that's when you put the acid, whatever you're putting in.
Well, use lemon juice, right?
I did use lemon juice, but you can also use vinegar.
Sure. Yeah.
And then that separates the curds from the whey.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't wait to do it.
It's so lovely. And then I just let it hang for about 5 or 6 hours once I'd separated it. And then I stirred in some sea salt and some cracked pepper, and
we should put chives in there.
But it was like late at night, and we've got
a whole lot of herbs that we could put in the next one. But you can mix in whatever you want. Obviously, maybe we should dice up that chili. You know what? I still haven't touched that.
I don't know about the chili.
I still haven't. It's still in the fridge. It's like a little bottle of fire in the fridge, and I still haven't tried it yet. But anyhow,
it's going to be great. Well, you know, your pasteurization, your small amount of pasteurization there for the cheese brings to mind that I always wonder, do folks understand about the pasteurized milk that they're getting at the store? You know, do they really know what's behind it? Do they really know the steps that are involved? And, you know, because everybody that are not everybody, but people, there are people I talk to that say, oh, I'm afraid of raw milk. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no. You don't have to be afraid of raw milk. That, you know, if you're getting it from a reputable source, you know, that sells to lots of people, you don't have to be afraid of it. But I looked into what's behind pasteurization. I mean, the cows, you know, how they're treated, mm-hmm. And the things like that. And I was literally horrified. And I wanted to, you know, to let people know and let them understand that actually, to now that I've, you know, kind of gotten into this, buying homogenized or the pasteurized milk at the store is actually dangerous. It's awful. And it's actually a lot worse, you know, than I thought. But just the little bit, the scene behind the pasteurization, before the milk comes out, you've got these cows in small confined areas, concrete and steel environments. They have piles and piles of manure in these small enclosures. They have no pasture, you know, to graze in whatsoever. They're totally, their lifespan is in these concrete and steel environments. They're artificially bred, and the feed that they're given is GMO feed, unnatural feeds like soy and cottonseed. I can't even imagine feeding a cow. And of course, there's a report this week of mad cow disease in California, and it comes from cows being fed cow protein, recycled cow protein, and they believe that's how this mad cow disease happens. So, and then because these animals are in this horrible environment, they have to give them hormones and antibiotics, or they'll die. You know, they die sooner anyway, but they'll die before their time if they don't, you know, pump them full of the hormones and antibiotics. And so then they milk these cows, and of course, you know, what the cows eat and what the cows are standing in, and, you know, some of that. I didn't know this, but there's in pasteurized milk, it can contain blood, and it can contain, you know, lots of pathogens from these unhealthy cows, and that kind of made me sick to read. But it's very true that these pathogens and blood and other awful things, even manure, can be, you know, in this milk. And then they take it and they heat it, you know, in order to kill everything. They heat it to a real high temperature for a prolonged period of time. It's it's not just bringing it to a boil and letting it go. It's for a time period that they boil the heck out of it, which destroys every enzyme in it. And I didn't know this until I started investigating, but there's an enzyme in raw milk that combats the lactose, and that's why when you drink raw milk, you don't get the lactose intolerant, because the raw milk has the enzyme in it that takes care of that.
Right.
And I didn't know that, and I thought, well, that's amazing. But see, they destroy it when they pasteurize it, and so that's gone. And actually, the lactose changes into something called B-lactose, and it's extremely hard for the human body to deal with. And I've been astounded at some of the things I've read. And of course, you know, this is another one of those situations where organic, certified organic, means nothing. All it means is that the cows are fed feed that, you know, is not GMO. They're fed, you know, pretty good feed, and they don't get hormones. They don't get the antibiotics and hormones, that's not permitted. And that's actually about the only difference.
Right.
Really? So the environment is generally the same?
It can be,
I was just going to say, this is the benefit, I suppose, of, I mean, living where we are, we're very blessed that we can actually drive out to the dairy that we purchase the milk from. And they're beautiful, healthy cows. And whenever we go there, they're out among the pastures, beautiful green pastures and grass-fed cows. And that just comforts me a little when I go there and get it.
But this is the thing. And I suppose, do you think that modern-day pasteurization has meant that the farming or the dairy industry has lowered their standards of hygiene? Because
Yes. What's interesting, I don't know about Australia, but in the United States, that was another thing, was accountable to FDA inspectors during limited time. So there's not, FDA and U.S. Well, as a matter of fact, the regular pasteurized milk isn't even under the USDA. The organic is accountable to FDA and USDA during limited times. So, you know, I don't know what limited times means, but with as many dairies as there are, you know, you would wonder if somebody would get inspected, but once a year, once or twice a year.
And they would know when the inspections are on and all the rest of it.
Of course. But I guess there are the certain, I mean, when the milk goes through such a heavy filtering and heavy treatment, I suppose during that process of actually milking the animal, I can imagine that they wouldn't be so overly stringent on its surroundings and what may end up in there because of the process of homogenizing and pasteurizing and additives and all that sort of stuff.
It's just basically what you're saying is it's just basically another processed food. milk that you buy in a store is processed.
It's a processed food, that's right.
Exactly. And it actually has no value whatsoever. The calcium, because of the heating, the calcium is changed into a calcium that our bodies can't utilize. Almost all of the vitamin C is destroyed. One of the things that right here that is disturbing, that human pathogens are present in raw milk. Now, this is the milk that's going to be pasteurized. This is the cows that are confined, the great big, industrial dairies. Human pathogens are present in that milk 31% of the time. So they have to, they have to get rid of that. They have to pasteurize it. In raw milk, USA certified raw milk, pathogens have never been found in raw USA samples.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
That's astounding. And they have to add things back into pasteurized milk because they destroy, everything in it. So they have to, vitamin D fortified, those kinds of things, because it's all taken away. And as a matter of fact, they said that if a child was put on pasteurized milk, and I'm assuming they meant a baby, that the child would develop scurvy because of the lack of vitamin C.
Wow.
Raw milk is has a huge amount of vitamin C in it.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, you hear, I mean, honestly, with having children ourselves, I mean, I've just heard so many times babies that come off breast milk and go on to cow's milk when they're like one start having lactose intolerant symptoms, just can't cope with the milk. It's so common. It really is so common.
So just with what you've just said, Dev, I was just talking to Stephen Tamplin yesterday, naturopath, our local naturopath, and he mentioned, again, avoiding, as a rule, just as a rule of thumb, to avoid white processed food, white flour. He said white bread will kill you. Stay away from it. Mm-hmm. He said anything like white refined sugars and even, white potatoes and he said the sweet potato is better. Some of the rice grains, processed rice, stay away from it. And he said, and certainly processed milk. And I said to him, now, what about raw cow's milk and goat's milk? He said, it's definitely better. He said, A2 milk is a positive thing, but you don't want to have too much of any milk, he said, but certainly processed milk is something to avoid altogether. And as we know on this program, Deb, how much better is raw milk when you put the kefir in?
Oh, that's the key. I think that's what our ancestors did. And it certainly takes away a lot of the issues that milk, can generally cause. Mm-hmm. But to me, I have people all the time, contact me and say, Dev, I'm afraid to use milk kefir because I have milk issues.
Yeah.
And I try to tell them, no, you have pasteurized milk issues. Mm. You probably, won't have any issues if you're using a good raw milk and making kefir out of it. That even lessens, the issues even further. Now, of course, there's still going to be people, that have sensitivities, but it certainly diminishes, through the steps.
Mm.
But it's interesting because there's dozens of reports and studies on pasteurized milk. And most of them are highly unfavorable. Some of that they're finding that commercial pasteurized milk can cause such things as intestinal colic. And, I think even adults can have a type of colic, intestinal irritation, intestinal bleeding, anemia, allergic and sinus problems. And I know that I used to have sinus problems with milk. It caused like a mucus situation in my head. And of course it can have, salmonella. Well, on the other hand, kefir is proven to get rid of allergies and I've proven that in my life with the people just around me in my office who are just sneezing and carrying on, and I'm just sitting there looking at them. And I used to be one of them. I mean, I did. I used to have that horrible allergy in the springtime here, but I don't seem to have it anymore. And, you know, their milk is contaminated with blood and pus cells.
Had to say pus.
I'm sorry. Oh, you know, I'd rather people really think about this before they get any milk anymore. But the heating, it alters the milk's amino acids, mm-hmm. lysine and triacine, making the whole complex of the proteins less available. It promotes the rancid, it makes rancid the unsaturated fatty acids, and it destroys the vitamins. Vitamin C loss is about 50%. Loss of other water soluble vitamins can run as high as 80%, and pasteurization alters milk's mineral components such as calcium, chlorine, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium, sodium, and sulfur, as well as many trace minerals, making them less available. Mm-hmm. And we know that kefir does the actual opposite of all of this. Just amazing opposite of that. So your pasteurized milk is dead. I mean, it's and it's actually detrimental to you and can make you sicker. So I hope to just, you know, get in people's minds straight that it's the pasteurized milk, the industrialized, you know, commercialized milk that they have issues with. They probably wouldn't have issues with raw goat milk and raw cow milk. Mm-hmm. Or even low heat pasteurized, there's a little bit of controversy there, but below 115 degrees does not destroy enzymes.
Right.
And so, you know, if somebody's not comfortable with raw milk, they could heat it, you know, up to about 110 for a short time, and they wouldn't destroy the enzymes in it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I know a couple of people who actually do that. We don't have a problem with just drinking the raw milk, obviously, but that is another option. And at least that way, you know that there's nothing else going into it. You're just heating it.
Yeah, sure.
There's no additives or anything like that. So, sure. You know, it's probably the best of...
I guess so. So yeah. What we do, though, I mean, you've got... you strain it through...
Oh, muslin, yeah.
Yeah, and that's all we do. We filter it through that and...
Well, it's already... I mean, the milk that we buy has already gone through...
It's already filtered, Dev, but I'm just process. A little bit more... I'm like, hey, how much harm can it do if we filter it again?
Well, I mean, I do it with the goat's milk, so...
Yeah, so it's all good. Okay, now, Dev, is there... What else are we talking about?
Well, that's one of the biggest things I wanted to talk about, but... You know, in all of this, in all of the things that, you know, we're hoping folks will do as far as eating, you know, the good whole foods and get away from all the processed things and what Hani and I love to say, you know, slow food, even though we try to bring, you know, fast ways to prepare the slow food that makes it easier. I think one of the things is that we have to be prepared, you know, for the future. I read an article this week, and this is what really struck me about it, is we all don't know what's coming in the future. And I talked to lots of people, this gentleman in Mississippi and I have talked quite a bit about being prepared physically for whatever the future could hold, because it, you know, a lot of people don't think the future looks real bright, and that we could go through some stuff, you know, going forward. And so to be in really good physical condition, be very healthy, and actually, you know how to live off the land and be able to, you know, grow your vegetables, preserve your vegetables. You know, you may be in a situation where you're, you know, preserving things because there's very little and you want to make it last, you know. Yeah. So the fermentation process is really good to know, you know, because of that. But even all of that aside, I read a disturbing article about a little girl in Texas that she was 14 years old, and she developed an infection on her leg, and the culprit was Pythium insidiosum, and it's a fungus-like microbe that rarely causes disease in humans, and even then, primarily in Thailand. And that's what's interesting, is that this microbe has long been known to be a veterinary pathogen, primarily affecting horses and dogs, disfiguring them, often fatally. Only about 150 human cases have been reported, period, and all of these people were in Thailand. Needless to say, this was an unexpected result, as this young woman had not left Texas. And they go on to say that pythiosis is believed to be an emerging human pathogen. And see that we don't hear about these emerging human pathogens very often, mm-hmm. meaning that the number of cases are expected to rise dramatically in the future. Now, you know, there's lots of stuff like that out there that, you know, I just happened on this article kind of really by accident, but it got me to thinking, how are we preparing our bodies to withstand onslaughts of things that we don't even know are out there, these pathogens that are emerging, you know, because of, gosh, we've killed off a lot of good bacteria in the world around us by trying to kill the bad bacteria, mm-hmm. you know. And one of the things this article, you know, was very big about saying was how antifungals and antibiotics, this it didn't even affect this pathogen whatsoever. It made no difference because our, you know, that we've overused antibiotics, mm-hmm. I think, you mm-hmm. know, in the world. And you know, we really need to take it seriously to protect ourselves with, you know, surround ourselves with good health and everything we can do to withstand things that we don't even know are out there. This little girl just went swimming in a, you know, I guess it was in like a creek or a lake or something. And she ended up with something that only 150 people in the world ever had.
Yeah. I mean, this and, is the thing. I think like you were saying, I mean, the industrial food industry has a use by date. We just can't continue on doing what we're doing.
No, because when you look at the, and as you alluded to, Dev, when you look at the forecasts of certain things like, say, Alzheimer's disease or cancer or whatever it may be, you see that they are predicting increases of these diseases by hundreds of percents over the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. And you think, how is it that such things are, I mean, with all, everything we know and all the treatments that we have and all that sort of stuff, obviously it's got something to do with the way things are being done this century as opposed to the previous century. What were they doing back then? What are we doing now? Surely it has something to do with our environment and specifically what it is that we are consuming. So what are we consuming that is different to the way they consumed back then? And it gets people thinking. And as you say, if it's going to be increasing detrimentally, now is the time to be thinking, what can I do differently and how can I change the way that I consume so that I am better prepared to deal with what's up ahead?
Yes, and not only that, you know, it's your mindset. We've been, I don't know, you know, I'm sure Australia is not that much different from the onslaught of slick advertising and, you got to have this and you got to have mm-hmm. that. And, you know, that has really worked as far as, you know, brainwashing or conditioning or, you know, whatever you want to call it, that we see all these things and think, well, you know, this is better. And they say, oh, this is all natural, you know. And it's just not. I kind of fussed at my daughter this week in a sweet way, but she got my point. She's having a few little health issues. And she said, I know now I need to buckle down and do everything you say. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, honey, I said, that doesn't mean going to the store and buying a bag of pre-cut broccoli. I said, you need to go buy a head of broccoli and cut it yourself. Yeah. I said, what you don't understand is they, in order to preserve that broccoli in that plastic bag, they put something on it, you mm-hmm. know, to keep it looking good and fresh and, mm-hmm. you know, all that. And I said, I understand you work. I understand, you know, you're a single mom. I know it's hard, but, and it's easy to go through that store and grab that bag of broccoli. I said, but it's really not that much harder to grab that head of broccoli. And I said, you can take a knife and in just a few swipes, you can cut all those little broccoli heads off
yeah.
and and have nice fresh broccoli.
That's right. And that's just one small thing that
you know, that reminds me of the tube of, I don't know if we spoke about this before, but the tube of avocado, the avocado
yeah.
tube. It was like a toothpaste tube.
Here.
You have that there? And it was
yeah.
and it was in the fruit and veg department.
Yeah.
And it was not, you know, a couple of steps away from actual avocado. But you
right.
know, people go, you know what? I've got to cut that avocado open and then get a spoon and scoop it out. Or I could go the toothpaste avocado and just squeeze it out and there it is. Yeah, I'm gonna go that. And it was called, what was it called?
Oh, I can't.
It was
remember.
Called something like Real Avocado. That's yeah. or something like that it was called, and it was just so funny.
Yeah.
But you're right, we get into the we easily slot into the mindset of convenience. Just buy it. It's just a few cents more. It's just more convenient. It saves me time, whatever.
Well, it really doesn't, because you've got to open the thing.
I know.
Anyway, and then you've got to struggle with the lid that won't open properly.
But
and
it's
then,
a shiny, know. Shiny little tube with cool writing on it, with a little smiley face aliens and everything. And the kids go, oh, that looks like fun. And you think, oh, maybe I'll get the kids to eat avocado because it's got little aliens on it. And so people buy it. But this is the thing. We've got to go back to the way they used to eat.
It's really not that hard. Just pick up the avocado.
Because there's stuff in there that shouldn't be there, as you pointed out, Dev.
I mean, these things even say like 100% avocado.
Plus.
Well, that doesn't even, they don't even have to put that on. They don't even have to put it on. But obviously there has to be a preservative or something in there.
Of course.
But the other thing.
They got to keep it from turning brown.
That's right.
Yeah.
But obviously the laws don't require them to put what that is on there, like milk. Like you've just got like your milk, you go and buy milk from the store and it says 100% milk. But you know, if you've done a bit of research, there's other things in there, but they're not required to tell you what that is. But one thing I have actually started to notice a little bit more in mainstream supermarkets and convenience stores is that there's quite a number of products that are using things like raw, natural, in their promotional, in their title. Like I saw today in the shops, there were these these little juices, you know, that you stick a straw in, and, you know, those
Tetra
things.
Pack things, yeah.
Yeah, the little ones that the kids put in their lunchboxes and things like that. And it just said raw. It was called raw.
Oh, it was just called raw.
Yeah.
There you go.
And it's misleading. And it will. I think they're starting to catch on a little bit. You know, if you just sort of give the little, oh, yes, it's natural and it's good for you and it's healthy. And
so
it's
buzzwords like organic and natural and raw and things like that, they're allowed to be included in the title.
Yeah, there's no reason why not.
But then, believe me, boys and girls, it always pays to look, turn and find the little tiny itty-bitty writing, and if you need to, bring a magnifying glass to the supermarket and see how many numbers and how many things you can't pronounce are actually in the ingredients. Mm. There's some advice. And as you say, Dev, if you can't pronounce it, maybe you shouldn't be eating it. Maybe check it out first before you consume it. Dev.
Well, I just wanted to say that you can bet, and people need to understand this, that if it's in a bottle or a jar or one of those little juice packs, it's been pasteurized. Yeah. Even juices, those things have been pasteurized. They've been heated. They're dead. All the enzymes are dead. Yeah. There's, you know, they've had to add things back in to make it of any kind of value. And that's like we had talked about before, the young coconut water kefir. They have coconut water in the store, but it's from concentrate and it's pasteurized.
Yeah.
Yehovah didn't make it that way. It didn't come off the tree.
No.
The pot, so.
No, that's right. And his plan for us is to live long, healthy lives.
Amen.
And
yes.
And by jumping off the industrial diet is the first.
There it is,
essential.
The industrial diet. I like that. I think that sums it up quite nicely. What are we going to leave the listeners with, Dev?
Well, I'm doing some experiments, and this is Hani's fault.
Go on.
I will report on this next time. I'm experimenting with lemons. Hani sent me a wonderful article about lemons, and come to find out, I've done some research. She knows when she tells me something, I'm going to be like a dog on a hunt. And so I'm experimenting. It turns out lemons happen to be a little miracle in a little yellow ball.
Yes.
And so I have a lot of good things to report about that. And a skincare situation that I hope to report about.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cheap and easy.
Next week's lemons, you know, I'm really excited about that because our lemon tree is bursting full of lemons.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely bursting. And some of them are starting to ripen up now, but there are so many of them all at different stages all around the tree. So we're going to be, oh boy, I guess there's probably about a year's supply of lemons on the tree.
That's awesome. You'll be able to clean. You're going to be amazed at what you're going to be able to do with all of them.
I'm looking forward to that. So next week we're going to be talking about the miracle of lemons. And
yes,
Dev, thank you so much for coming back onto Truth to You. The Cultured Karaite, the website is culturedkaraite.blogspot.com. That's culturedkaraite.blogspot.com. And we look forward to talking to you next week. In the meantime, listeners, be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's word. Shalom.
Shalom. That's so good.